This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we here on Savor are what you might call food explorers. It has been our actual job to go to cool places and eat like a lot of the food there.
And then talk about it.
And then talk about it into these microphones, which is a crazy dream job.
Yes.
Well, if you're like us and willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people like us who are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Christmas ham.
Yes. And what an episode it is. We were discussing this earlier. It turns out we're going to have to come back and do other episodes on different types of ham.
Yeah, not even different cuts of pork.
Right.
Right. Just different aspects of the ham process. There is more ham to cover.
There is a lot of ham to cover. This is a very fun one. I know we've covered a lot of holiday topics, so this is sort of one we've been putting off for a while, but here we are.
Yeah. It's one of those that I thought, is there even enough to talk about? Yes, gentle listener, there is.
But
this is actually one that I have very little experience with.
Yes. And it turns out you're not alone. I was kind of surprised by how recent a lot of this is. But my family, I grew up with I think the ham actually got introduced later, so I wouldn't say grow up with it. But when I was in college, a ham was added to our traditional Christmas meal and Thanksgiving meal.
Both. Huh.
Both, yes. Because I think my mom and I prefer turkey. My two brothers and my dad preferred ham.
Okay.
So I think it was sort of like why don't we add in the ham? And I, as the person who cooks a lot of this along with my mom, a couple years ago, I was like, no more. There shall be no more ham because we had too much food. I had to come up with all these recipes on how to use up the ham, which a lot of them were very good. But then this is more work for me. And guess what? If you're not cooking the ham, it's out.
Yeah.
It's out.
Yeah, it's no longer your decision after a certain point. Yeah, you got to pick your battles.
Yeah. And I picked it. And then I went into a whole thing. I was like, you know what? You can have ham. Many times a year we have ham. There's other celebrations that incorporate ham.
How many times a year do you have ham?
actually, not so much anymore, but we usually have it on Easter.
Okay.
And we used to have it a couple times throughout the year. Turkey, only Thanksgiving, Christmas. Ham, a couple times throughout the year.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so... I have literally never cooked a ham. Before doing this reading, I would have had no idea how to go about it. I only very rarely had like a holiday ham when I was growing up. I guess mostly because, it's not just because I grew up mostly with my Jewish side of the family, because like we ate bacon cheeseburgers. It's not like we were keeping kosher. But yeah, it just wasn't the holiday go-to. In most parts of my family, I had like a couple cousins who would do a Christmas ham. And so if I was hanging out with them, then that would happen. But yeah, I don't really get it. I don't really understand. I mean, maybe I just haven't had like a really good one. And so maybe I do need to make one and like, you know, find all the little like tricks that I like and the flavors that I like and make it like right for me. I'm really ham neutral.
I get it because it's hard to explain, but basically to me, the ham, and this is all personal, nobody get offended, okay? The ham is like your very hard hit of salt. And we would never put the like sugar glazing or maple glazing, anything like that. So we didn't have the sweet part going on, which I get a lot of people like, but that was never our thing. So it's like if you've got your kind of turkey feels healthier and it's lighter flavored, whereas ham is like hit you in your face salt. So it's like a really quick fix of flavor. And it's really, when we would cook it, it's like really maximized per bite.
Sure. Yeah. I get that. I don't know. I guess pork in general is not like my favorite. Anyway, it doesn't, this is all beside the point.
Yes. People do have strong opinions about it.
Oh, yes. As with any other, especially like holiday related food, right? Yeah. Like there's so much personal opinion and nostalgia wrapped up in it.
Well, it's just funny to me because a lot of this episode did break down to like people who prefer turkey versus people who prefer ham on holidays.
Yeah.
Which speaking of, you can see our turkey episode. You can also see any sausage episode that we've done.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of the meat episodes do touch on some of the things we're going to talk about in some way. Pastrami, corned beef, bacon, was there something else? I don't know. It was hours and hours ago.
Oof. Hours, you say.
Could have been anything.
Could have been. Well, I guess this brings us to our question.
Yeah.
Christmas ham. What is it?
Well, a Christmas ham can be a lot of things, but what you are generally looking at is a portion of the rear leg of a pig that's been somehow cured, meaning a preserved using things like salt or sugar, maybe smoked, and then baked or roasted, often with some kind of a sweet holiday-spiced glaze on the outside. So they're big and impressive and decorative, shiny and crisp on the outside and chewy tender on the inside, salty and savory and sweet with hints of warming spices and gentle contrasts from any kind of like glaze or topping ingredients like fruit or maple syrup. They're opulent, but also homey. They're like if a gingerbread house were a main dish and salty, a salty main dish gingerbread house made of pork.
Mm-hmm. The image you're painting in my mind is excellent.
All right. So ham is a category. And legally can mean different things in different places, especially with different modifying words attached. You know, you can have a ham with an actual pig's bone still in it, or a ham that is made of bits of pork that have been industrially separated and then smooshed back together in a different order. But the ham section of a pig is its meaty hind leg, starting above the hoof and ankle structure, which are the trotters and the hocks, and then going up the lower half of the leg, which is the shank, and then across the equivalent of the knee, and then up the thigh portion, which is called the butt or the sirloin, to where the leg meets the hip. The shank plus the butt is the whole ham. And it's sort of a lot. Like you're looking at like 15 to 20 pounds of meat. That's like 7 to 9 kilos. That's like a bunch. So these days, hams are often produced or at least sold separately, a shank and sirloin separately. The shank is usually a little fattier and like can be easier to carve because it's just like a single bone that you have to deal with in there. And the meat is a little bit like tighter. But you know, if you can get around that hip joint, some people prefer a sirloin, one of those things depends on what you want.
Mm-hmm. All these memories are coming flooding back.
No.
Me angrily cutting into the ham like, ah! I liked it. It was just too much. And even my brothers admitted this year it was overkill. Too much.
Oh, well, I'm glad that they understood.
Yes, they did. They did. And in fact, I was telling them about all my battles to my mom is very much the type who's like, you haven't had enough food and there's too much food.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, my battles to cut down on all the food she makes. And we made a plan to cut down on the day before Christmas has now gotten out of hand.
Oh.
I know. So we'll see. What happens?
Oh, yeah. I love the traditions that develop around like the day before and the day after yes. Christmas and all of the other foods that come sneaking in when you're like, I'm about to prepare a feast, an actual
I know.
Feast.
Exactly.
What is happening? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So once you've got your cut of pork, the next step in making it a ham is probably curing it. We talked about curing a few times on the show. It's when you preserve something, and usually you're talking about meat, by making it inhospitable to microbes. Most microbes need water, and meat has a bunch of water in it, so you want to get that water out, or like tie it up. Like, have you ever given a child or a well-meaning friend or parent, I'm gonna give you something to do over here kind of task?
Yes.
Like that's sort of what you're looking to do with the water in ham to make it less hospitable to microbes. Okay. Luckily for us, sugar and salt, aside from being delicious, are hygroscopic, meaning that they draw water to themselves and sort of occupy it. So if you either apply salt and or sugar to the surface of a cut of meat or soak the meat in a brine made with that stuff, molecules of the salt and or sugar will work their way into the meat via osmosis and occupy the water. Microbes cannot use it, and the meat lasts longer. This also adds some salty and sugary flavor, and flavor from any other spices or seasonings that you put into that brine or rub. And it does this cool physical thing. Okay, so salt loosens up fibers of protein in meat. Part of what can make cooked meat dry, like a dry turkey, is that the fibers will tighten up during cooking and squeeze out moisture. So keeping those fibers loose will keep the meat more juicy as it cooks. Good times there. Now, if you find the right butcher, you can buy a fresh ham and do this at home, or just cook it however you want to. You don't have to cure it if you don't want to. But most hams sold, certainly in the United States, are already cured, and they fall into two categories, brine-cured city hams and dry-cured country hams. These are, like, the official names for these okay. products, okay? This uh-huh. isn't, like, country mouse, city mouse. Like, it's not... I mean, it's a little bit of a difference of perspective, I suppose, because people have very strong opinions about which one yes. they want. But yeah. Also, I will say that regionally, further confusing the issue, any of these salt cured hams might be called corned hams, because the term corned comes from the kernels or grains. Or corns of salt that are used in the curing process.
Mm.
With me?
Mm. Yes. I'm befuddled, but amused. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Hams are befuddling. That's where we are. Okay, so city hams are soaked in brine, or more inexpensively, but more rapidly, injected with brine. The process might take anywhere from a couple days to a few weeks. You wind up with a hunk of pork that's still pretty moist. It'll probably be smoked or perhaps baked low and slow, so that it is fully cooked when it's sold. It might be really pink in color from the addition of a preservative called sodium nitrite during the brining process, which helps stabilize the fats in meat and also prevents the growth of the type of bacteria that cause botulism. Either way, city hams are usually served in like big, thick slices, typically cut in a spiral away from a shank bone. You can also buy boneless hams, which are brine-cured hams that have had the bones removed and that are pressed back into like a kind of cylindrical, almost footballish sort of shape. They can be pretty cohesive due to that salt-protein fiber action, plus the addition of little bits of processed ham as filler, yeah. Flavor-wise, all of that watery brine that you're introducing can sort of dilute the ham flavor of your ham. I mean, like, yes, you've got like salt and sugar and seasonings in there, but you're diluting the hamminess. This is one case where less is more. Less water is generally considered more desirable in the finished product. If you're buying a ham, the packaging should indicate either the percentage of water added by weight or some terminology that like might sound complicated, but it's actually fairly self-explanatory when you like see it laid out. In the United States, there are four categories of ham, which are ham, which is ham.
Yeah. Okay.
No water added. Then there's ham with natural juices, which has like a little bit of water. Ham water added, which has a bit more water, and then ham and water product. Which can be almost a quarter added water by weight.
Whew.
However, you can escape all of this mess by going with a country ham. Country hams are coated with a dry rub and then hung in a cool, arid environment to let the rub work its way into the meat and push water molecules out over the course of, like, months. This is the same basic process that we described in our prosciutto fraud episode. Again, we probably have to come back to prosciutto at some point anyway.
Right.
country ham might be smoked, but it's often sold without ever seeing heat, which is fine and safe. You wind up with a drier, saltier, chewier, like deep red colored and kind of hammier ham. So if you're going to serve it like you would a city ham, it typically has to be soaked and probably steamed to get some of the salt out and kind of like reconstitute it just a tiny bit. I understand this is usually served sliced a little bit thinner. I'm not totally sure I've ever had one.
Oh, I definitely have. This is fun. I'm like, I've had experience in the country and the city. I've seen them both.
Ooh, do you have a preference?
I generally, I feel like this is going to make people angry, but when I was a kid, I actually liked the city ham better. Because that usually entailed, I think I talked about this in our pea episode, but we used to make English peas, mashed potatoes, ham.
Okay.
And so I liked that whole meal.
Okay.
Whereas a country ham, it usually had I wasn't a huge fan of like the sugar glaze, and
okay.
It usually had that on top of it. It was, in my experience, sliced thinner. It just had like a sweetness that I think a lot of people appeals to a lot of people, but for me, I liked the salt, like the punch of salt in your
face.
Sure,
yeah. Sweet and salty isn't for everyone at all times in their life. So sure,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
in both of these cases, what you're doing at home is really just bringing the ham up to serving temperature. You're not cooking it because it's already been cooked in one way or another. There might be scare quotes involved because you're technically cooking with like time and salt rather than heat. But right, at any point. I understand that this is not always the case internationally. Like in other countries, a cured ham might be sold totally unsmoked and uncooked. So check the packaging. Ask your butcher. I don't want no, please nobody get food poisoning on my account.
No, no, thank you.
And in any case, safe internal temperature for pork is somewhere around 140 Fahrenheit, which is 60 Celsius, or maybe like a couple degrees lower. You can your mileage may vary. Again, check with your local health institution.
Which is not us.
Which is not us. No. Mm-mm. lots of people do like a glaze. If you're going to apply this, you apply it towards the end of the heating process. Often you'll cut like a crosshatch into the surface of the ham first, then take some kind of syrup that you've simmered up using sweeteners like brown sugar or honey or maple syrup, maybe a jelly or a marmalade, maybe Coca-Cola or some kind of wine, maybe some orange juice or orange peel. Maybe some warming spices like clove or nutmeg or mustard or ginger. Cook it into a syrup and baste the ham with this a couple times as it finishes. Some recipes even call for like flour or breadcrumbs to add a little bit of crunch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might decorate a ham by studding the crosshatch with whole cloves or candied cherries or arranging slices of fruit like rings of pineapple or apple or orange or pear across the surface. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be served as the main dish in family-style holiday meals. We're talking specifically today about Christmas, but as Annie said, this can happen for other kind of special occasions. With lots of starchy sides, sometimes a vegetable. I don't know. seasonings might be adjusted depending on the time of year or the holiday in question. And from what I understand, this is a very, like, you always have so much leftovers, and it's very popular in, like, sandwiches and casseroles, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. We would make, the soup was my biggest hit. We would make, like, a potato ham soup, and people loved it. Too bad. I'm in the holiday spirit. Never will I make the dish that you actually want, only what I want.
Love it. Yeah. All right. They can learn to cook what they like.
That's true. That's true. Well, what about the nutrition?
It does depend upon the ham in question. There does tend to be a lot of salt involved in the ham. It can have a bunch of added sugars. It will have a good punch of protein, though. It tends to be actually less fatty than turkey, depending on what type of what cut of turkey you're consuming, whether or not you're consuming the skin. Eat a vegetable, drink water.
Yes, yes. As always, vegetables, water, big fans.
Oh, yeah.
We do have some numbers for you.
We do.
According to Time magazine, Americans buy up around 318 million pounds of ham around the holidays.
Just Christmas. This is not including Thanksgiving. This is just Christmas. And pound for pound, this is just about as much turkey as we buy for Christmas.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
An informal mashed study found that 36 of respondents said that Christmas ham was their favorite holiday dish.
Okay. All right. I think that was here in the States. I believe that ham is a favorite holiday dish in Australia, up around like 43% of the time.
I read somewhere it was popular in Australia too. So yeah. Australian listeners, please let us know.
Oh, yeah. Everyone who has a ham experience that is different from this. Yes. Like a holiday ham experience. I'm not talking about like a cold cut of prosciutto or something. Right. But this type of ham roast, I want to know about it. Mm-hmm. All right. This year, 2022, prices of ham are up like 15% to 30%. Over last year, due to a number of factors, including the avian flu epidemic, making turkey and chicken more expensive, and therefore making more people turn to ham, and then therefore making ham more expensive. Also, the continued COVID pandemic, supply chain and worker issues, which have reduced overall U.S. pork production by 3.2% this year.
I did see a couple of articles I couldn't get past the paywall. But listeners, again, if you have experience, but about like Spain specifically and how important ham is to certain holiday celebrations in Spain. And it's had a lot of ups and downs with supply chain issues. So, let us know. I never heard of this either, but every year in Maryland, the St. George Island Improvement Association holds a ham stuffing ceremony right before Christmas. It's a bring your own ham experience. And then you stuff it. This is a regional specialty of a corned ham that is filled with vegetables and spices. And from what I read, like, you can kind of tell, like, oh, this is Northern Maryland or Southern Maryland based on, oh, they put kale in there, or they did this, or they did this.
Oh, that's so cool. I've not heard of this ever.
Me either. Listeners, again, please write in, because I love this. Bring your own ham.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. but like, what vegetables? What spices? What? Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Cool.
Yes. It's kind of like your gingerbread thing. It's like a very meaty, proteiny version of like going to a build your own gingerbread house event. And I adore it.
Cool.
We actually are going to talk about a bit more about how that got started in the history section.
We are, and we will get to that in just a moment, but first we are going to get into a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we are what you might call food explorers. We are so lucky that a part of our job involves traveling and trying a lot of the food where we go to travel, and then coming back here and telling all of you good listeners about it. And through that, we have discovered some amazing dishes.
Sure, yes. Like, I had never understood what poke really could be, and it is delightful.
It is stunningly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we had a lot of on our trip to Hawaii. Another thing from their passion fruit I now look for in literally every menu that I read. I'm like, yep, that one has passion fruit. Going for it.
And then all of the moles, and especially the green mole that you heard us talk about recently that we had
from
in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah. Oh, or just steak basements.
Who doesn't love a steak basement?
Exactly. Well, if you are like us and you're willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people who, like us, are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And yes, this is still not our pork episode, and apparently not our last ham episode, even.
No.
But that being said, we have discussed multiple times on this show the importance of preserving foods, including meat, so that they last through lean times or over long journeys, especially perhaps. And so, in that spirit, humans have been curing pork for thousands of years, possibly as far back as 4,900 BCE in China. Some of the first records indicate people were curing pork. We've also talked in several episodes about the tradition born of necessity of slaughtering pigs before winter sets in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you've got these pigs. You need meat or food to last you through the winter. Maybe you can't feed your pigs through the winter, so you slaughter them. And then you have this feast and you cure the leftovers, which is a way to preserve them to get through the harsh, cold months. Some speculate one of the earliest examples of the Christmas ham may have been wild boar. This story takes a bit of a twist, but just stick with it, okay?
Okay. All right.
So may have been wild boar, which the Norse people associated with the god of fertility and good weather, and therefore would sacrifice these boar for this god. And then after game hunts, Germanic pagans would serve their catch, which may have included ham. at Yuletide feasts and winter solstice events, festivals. We've talked about those in the past. And yeah, to extremely simplify a very complex issue, basically European Christians were trying to combine slash supersede their celebrations and religions with these pagan ones. But they would take pieces of feasting from pagan traditions and repurpose them. And as part of this bore, perhaps, grew to be associated with St. Stephen. But there's not a lot to back this up. This is one of those things where, like, everything I read wrote about this. But then the more you dug into it, yeah. It was like, I don't... Okay.
Yeah. It's really speculative, possibly yes. apocryphal. Just, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? We'll have more about it later. But it was one of those, I know we've talked about this before, but sometimes, especially for me, I don't know about your experience, Lauren, but I'll be like, oh, I feel like I've got the grasp of the story. Here we go. And then I find one source that's like, no, all of this is wrong.
It's like, certainly not. Yes. Nah.
So it's like a big like heckin' twist heck. For me.
Yeah.
Yes. But more on that in a second. More on that in a second. Ham and curing techniques traveled from China to Europe along trade routes. Some sources specifically credit Marco Polo with popularizing these techniques in Europe after his return from China in the 1200s, which we've seen happen in many. That's another thing that I think is just often apocryphal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's not to say ham wasn't in Europe before then. It was. And in fact, there's a recipe from the 2nd century CE for ham with figs.
Ooh.
I think it was out of Rome, but it wasn't specified. But yeah, so it was around. It was around. People were eating it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some records suggest that boar meat was being served as part of Christmas feast by the 1200s in Europe. By the Middle Ages, the heads of pigs were not uncommon at European Christmas feast, which you can find recipes for.
Oh, yeah. Those cheeks are delicious. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And apparently some people would wear boar masks as part of it.
Ooh.
And I'm like, it was written as it was supposed to be kind of a silly, fun thing that people did. Huh. But I'm like, I've seen too many horror movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Movies. That is. Okay. I was about to say it's way more metal than my Christmas celebrations. But but honestly, I go to a lot of like Krampus festivities
yes,
around this
do.
Time of year. So it's about equally metal. It's yeah.
Yes,
like 50-50.
Yes. Yeah.
Metal returns.
Yeah. There are a lot of metal Christmas traditions, actually, that we've talked about some on this show where I'm like, whoa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every time I think I'm weird, I'm like, organized religion, y'all do it.
I wish we could find more about that, like, cookie where you cut the head off. Listeners, again, please let us know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these, like, cooked boar heads would serve as the centerpiece at some Christmas meals. And I did find some recipes from that time that advised to recreate like the fur of the boar by rubbing the meat with lard and ash, which is kind of like our lamb cake episode. I'm telling you. It's intense.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah. By the 17th century, many colonists in North America were raising pigs. And yeah, they were introduced to the Americas in the 1600s. And so, oh, gosh, to simplify another complex thing, basically that meant that pork processing and products were all over the globe around this time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was happening pretty much everywhere. And that corned ham, that corn spice ham from Maryland I mentioned at the top. Well, some historians think that this tradition came with the first colonists who were essentially trying to make ingredients stretch. So let's stuff this ham with stuff. Others think that enslaved people in the area were given small hams and filled them with what they could get their hands on to make it more filling and longer lasting.
Yeah. The dry cured country ham, as we know it, was developed around the South sometime in the 1700s, combining these techniques that like earliest colonists would have learned from Native Americans, along with ham technology from lots of different European colonists, and also from the techniques brought over and developed by enslaved peoples.
Right. And several other regional versions of ham started popping up during this time. Recipes for glazed hams date back to the 1800s. Ham was a fairly common dish in North America by the 18th and 19th century, and it was featured on Christmas menus going back to the 1700s, but it really wasn't a common Christmas dish at the time, and it was A lot of the things I read implied, like, that's kind of what you ate if you couldn't get a turkey. Like, it was, you ate it not at holidays. You ate it, like, year-round.
Yeah, pork was something, and especially, like, a cured pork was something you ate year-round. Like, why would you have that for a special occasion?
Right. And that really, like I said, didn't change until pretty recently. It was the mid-20th century that cured pork thigh, what a lot of us would call ham or spiral ham, became this thing that most of us who have a Christmas ham, it's what we think of, is this.
Yeah.
In fact, the first mentions of Christmas ham in the U.S. didn't take place until the 1900s. And still, Christmas turkey was far more popular. There's actually a really great article that compares like the numbers
timeline.
And mentions. Yes,
oh, I love
it's
it.
Cool. It was intense. It was like 13 times more popular turkey was than ham. This relative lateness of Christmas ham is one of the reasons most historians think that that story, that popularly circulated story linking Christmas ham to paganism and pagan festivals, isn't true.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's pretty recent. Most early recipes of Christmas ham in American and European cookbooks indicate that this was just a ham served at Christmas. So it didn't have like a specific type of preparation or anything. Though there were a few exceptions that usually involved boiling and baking the ham. A lot of other steps, to be honest. I'm simplifying this too. But then you would serve it with a coating of breadcrumbs, which I've never had. That was a first.
Yeah, yeah, me neither.
Mm-hmm. Companies that made ham in the U.S. started promoting ham recipes in the early 1900s, including one for a holiday ham in 1916. In the 1930s, one of these campaigns was done in conjunction with the American Honey Institute, and this campaign touted ham glazed with honey and eventually led to the creation of the Honey Baked Ham Company. Yes, which I have a friend, I think I've told this story before, but she's so niche. She always gets that for her events, and it's one of those things that just endears me to her so much.
Yeah, yeah.
A U.S. patent for the device used for spiral ham was filed in 1944. And honestly, that was the point where I was like, oh, this has to be multiple episodes because this is a whole thing. This is a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. When I found that patent, I was sort of like, oh, no.
Yes. I will tell you, I will leave you with this teaser. Go look up old honey baked ham advertisements.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're wonderful. One of them includes the phrase, it's so good, it will haunt you. Like,
wow.
I love it. It will haunt you. And then one of them is all about the creator. And it's like, some people do something with their lives. I was essentially implying like, you didn't, but he did.
Huh. Wow. Yeah, both
pretty
of those
good.
Are great. All right. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Cool. Cool. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
look those up. This is also around the time that companies started to advertise making what I would call fancy dressed up hams that have like the, you know, pineapple slices and the maraschino cherries, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that the first honey-baked ham company store, like shop, opened in 1957 in Detroit, and they now have over 400 locations around the United States.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And Christmas ham experienced a surge in the U.S. in the 1960s. One of the main reasons for that is because during this time, the price of ham dropped compared to turkey, especially because it was a very much like turkey versus ham.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the conversation around it most of the time. From the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, in the 1950s, ham cost about 62 cents, which was cheaper than most other meats at the time. Another key part of this was location. The conditions for dry curing required a certain temperature, and I read all about this thing called the ham belt, but essentially a good portion of the U.S. can do this, is in the ham belt. And then, on top of that, advancements in technology helped popularize the Christmas ham, too, like the fast curing process that allowed for more production and lower prices. Canned ham was introduced in the 1920s, and it cut out the tedious boiling step that a lot of them ham had required before. And these newer products were advertised as being more tender, juicier, more flavorful, and less salty. And this is when ham really solidified itself as part of many people's Christmas spread.
Yeah, yeah. This is kind of talking about the switch from pretty much exclusively a country ham situation, mm-hmm. a dry rub situation, to a increasingly city ham brined situation, and the technologies involved thereof. I really meant to do a whole add-on section here about like kind of unpacking all of that, and then I was like, I've not planned my time well enough. I can't.
It really is a lot. And I love how many people trace very specific details about very specific types of ham and the technologies involved.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ooh. It is so fascinating and wonderful. Yes. And especially, right, when you get into, you know, like I said that this dry cured ham developed in the American South in the 1700s, right? Like researchers have pinpointed different specific styles and different specific technologies to all of these different peoples over this course of time in different areas. And it's just like, oh, wow. I mean, cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. But beyond the scope of the Christmas ham, I am afraid.
That's true. The Christmas ham, you know, only once a year. But other ham episodes for sure, because it is fascinating. And there was so much where I was like, oh, I want to read about that, but I don't have the time. It's pertinent necessarily to this.
Yeah. I mean, right. Like, so if we totally skipped over your very favorite ham traditions or types, then write in and be like, no, you need a whole episode about this thing. And, you know, heck, we'll do it.
Oh, you know, we will. And also, around the world, because I know the UK is kind of on par with the US when it comes to the Christmas ham, but other places do it too. So, let us know.
Yes.
Yes, but that is what we have to say about the Christmas ham for now.
It is. We do have some listener mail for you, though, and we will get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we are what you might call food explorers. We are so lucky that a part of our job involves traveling and trying a lot of the food where we go to travel and then coming back here and telling all of you good listeners about it. And through that, we have discovered some amazing dishes.
Sure, yes. Like, I had never understood what poke really could be, and it is delightful.
It is stunningly good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we had a lot of on our trip to Hawaii. Another thing from their passion fruit, I now look for in literally every menu that I read. I'm like, yep, that one has passion fruit. Going for it.
And then all of the moles, and especially the green mole that you heard us talk about recently that we had
from
in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah. Oh, or just steak basements.
Who doesn't love a steak basement?
Exactly. Well, if you are like us and you're willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people who, like us, are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener. Spiral. Kale wrote, I was listening to your gravy episode, and I thought I'd give a shout out to a local restaurant here in Eugene, Oregon. The Cornbread Cafe serves what they call vegan comfort food, and holy crap, is it good. Hmm. From their mac on cheese to their chicken fried tempeh, and yes, the cornbread too, it's enough to make one absolutely ravenous. Ravenous. Which brings me to my favorite item, the brown cashew gravy. Ooh. I don't know how they did it, but I somehow prefer this gravy over traditional forms of the sauce. I'm not sure I could drink a liter of it, but I definitely don't hold back when I indulge. No regrets. So, if you ever find yourself in this part of the Pacific Northwest, I highly recommend giving it a try. Guy Fieri has even given it his stamp of approval.
That
sounds good to me.
That does sound good. I mean, I'm into comfort food no matter when and how and where. But yes.
Mm-hmm.
Duly noted.
Points for pun. Points for pun. Yeah, forever out there. Mm-hmm.
It is definitely on our list. Okay.
Yes.
Megan wrote, I listened to the Hot Chocolate podcast last week, and I was totally nerd-sniped by the question of whether marshmallows cool down a mug of hot chocolate or keep it warm longer. In case you're not fans of the webcomic XKCD, nerd sniping is when you ask a nerd an interesting but difficult to answer question and distract them from whatever they were doing. In my case, instead of grading my class's lab reports, I tried to come up with an experiment to find out the effect of marshmallows and hot chocolate. Conveniently for me, my husband is also a physicist, so I nerd sniped him too. And between the two of us, I think we can figure it out. I'm actually planning to suggest the experiment we came up with as an activity for my department holiday party this year, because what better way for physicists to celebrate winter than to learn about the thermodynamics of hot chocolate? I'll write back with the results if the experiment works out. There's also other interesting physics involved, appropriately called the hot chocolate effect, where if you tap on the bottom of a mug of hot chocolate or any hot liquid, the pitch of the sound will increase as the air bubbles originally trapped in the hot liquid escape. Finally, I don't think I emailed in after you read my induction email in a listener mail, but thank you so much for saying my class where I teach how induction works sounds cool. Unsurprisingly, I'm not told that my classes are cool very often, and I really appreciate it.
Well, that's a shame and ridiculous, because it does sound cool.
It sounds heckin' awesome.
It does. And so does this. I cannot wait to hear about your thermodynamics of hot chocolate experiment.
This makes me so happy.
So excited.
Right?
Yes. I love it. I love that this is something you do at your holiday parties. That's fantastic.
That's wonderful. Oh, wow. Goodness. Oh, also, I will say update about the marshmallow cream spread on hot chocolate. Yeah, I still haven't tried it, but super producer Andrew highly recommended it as well.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. This is very important science hot chocolate experiments and updates we're getting. So
yeah.
We need you. We appreciate it. We didn't mean to nerd snipe you, but we're glad that we did.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually not sorry that you...
Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, we look forward to hearing back about that. Thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. Mm-hmm. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening. And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express Card. And we here on Saver are what you might call food explorers. It has been our actual job to go to cool places and eat like a lot of the food there.
And then talk about it.
And then talk about it into these microphones, which is a crazy dream job.
Yes.
Well, if you're like us and willing to travel to seek out new foods to try, you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. It's for people like us who are in search of the next food adventure. If you travel, you know. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth.
salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.